Chapter 34. The parole hearing was front page news in the Ford County Times. I loaded the report with every detail I could remember, and on page 5 let loose with a blistering editorial about the process. I sent a copy to each member of the parole board and to its attorney, and because I was so worked up, every member of the state legislature, the attorney general, the lieutenant governor, and the governor received a complimentary copy. Most ignored it, but the attorney for the parole board did not. He wrote me a lengthy letter in which he said he was deeply concerned about my willful violation of parole board procedures. He was pondering a session with the attorney general in which they would evaluate the gravity of my actions and possibly pursue action that would lead to far-reaching consequences. My lawyer, Harry Rex, had assured me the parole board's policy of secret meetings was patently unconstitutional, in clear violation of the First Amendment, and he would happily defend me in federal court, for a reduced hourly rate, of course. I swapped heated letters with the board's lawyer for a month before he seemed to lose interest in pursuing me. Rafe, Harry Rex's chief ambulance chaser, had a sidekick named Buster, a large, thick-chested cowboy with a gun in every pocket. I hired Buster for $100 a week to pretend he was my own personal leg breaker. For a few hours a day, he would hang around the front of the office or sit in my driveway or on one of my porches, any place where he might be seen, so folks would know that Willie Traynor was important enough to have a bodyguard. If the Pagets got close enough to take a shot, they would at least get something in return. After years of steadily gaining weight and ignoring the warnings of her doctors, Miss Callie finally relented. After a particularly bad visit to her clinic, she announced to Esau that she was going on a diet, 1,500 calories a day, except, mercifully, Thursday. A month passed and I couldn't discern any loss of weight, but the day after the Times story on the parole hearing, she suddenly looked as though she'd lost 50 pounds. Instead of frying a chicken, she baked one. Instead of whipping mashed potatoes with butter and thick cream and covering them with gravy, she boiled them. It was still delicious, but my system had become accustomed to its weekly dose of heavy grease. After the prayer, I handed her two letters from Sam. As always, she read them immediately while I jumped into the lunch. And as always, she smiled and laughed, and then finally wiped a tear. "He's doing fine," she said, and he was. With typical rough and tenacity, Sam had completed his first college degree in economics and was saving his money for law school. He was terribly homesick and weary of the weather. To boil it all down, he missed his mama and her cooking. President Carter had pardoned the draft dodgers, and Sam was wrestling with the decision to stay in Canada or come home. Many of his expatriate friends up there were vowing to stay and pursue Canadian citizenship, and he was heavily influenced by them. There was also a woman involved, though he had not told his parents. Sometimes we began with the news, but often it was the obituaries or even the classifieds. Since she read every word, Miss Callie knew who was selling a new litter of beagles and who wanted to buy a good used riding mower. And since she read every word every week, she knew how long a certain small farm or a mobile home had been on the market. She knew prices and values. A car would pass on the street during lunch. She would ask, "Now, what model is that?" "A 71 Plymouth Duster," I would answer. She would hesitate for a second, then say, "If it's real clean, it's in the $2,500 range." Stan Atkavich once needed to sell a 24-foot fishing boat he had repossessed. I called Miss Callie. She said, "Yes, a gentleman from Caraway was looking for one 3 weeks ago." I checked an old section of the classifieds and found the ad. Stan sold him the boat the next day. She loved the legal notices, one of the most lucrative sections of the paper. Deeds, foreclosures, divorce filings, probate matters, bankruptcy announcements, annexation hearings, dozens of legal notices were required by law to be published in the county paper. We got them all, and we charged a healthy rate.
I see where Mr. Everett Wainwright's estate is being probated, she said.
I vaguely remember his obituary, I said with a mouthful. When did he die?
5, maybe 6 months ago. Wasn't much of an obituary.
I have to work with whatever the family gives me. Did you know him?
He owned a grocery store near the tracks for many years.
I could tell by the inflection in her voice that she did not care for Mr. Everett Wainwright.
Good guy or bad guy?
He had 2 sets of prices, one for the whites, a higher one for Negroes. His goods were never marked in any way, and he was the only cashier. A white customer would call out, "Say, Mr. Wainwright, how much is this can of condensed milk?" And he'd holler back, 38 cents. A minute later, I would say, "Pardon me, Mr. Wainwright, but how much is this can of condensed milk?" And he'd snap, 54 cents. He was very open about it. He didn't care.